This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Let's bring James Hamm in here of the Insiders. Our insider from the Insiders, James Hamm here, as we kind of reset things. D'Lo and KC here on ESPN 1320. Hammer, no beam.
We're beamless in Sacramento.
No beam. What the hell happened at the start of the fourth quarter on Friday?
Yeah, it's complicated, right?
Nope, it's not.
LeBron James
doesn't appear to be complicated at all.
One of the greatest players of all time stepped on the court and converted into like prime Damian Lillard. Mm. Started bombing 28 footers and catching you in transition with long range 3-point shots, and the Kings didn't adjust and were caught off guard by the fact that a guy who is a good, as he's gotten older, has become a really good 3-point shooter. But still, from out there, I think a lot of times that's fine. If you want to take that shot, it's okay. The problem is that he hit three of those, and then Don't Connect hit one to open the quarter. Mm-hmm. And then LeBron started hitting follow-away mid-range jumpers and, got an and one, and the game spun out of control. I got what Mike Brown was saying about calling timeouts. He called a timeout like a minute and 58 seconds into the run or whatever it was, and he subbed three guys in. They also, right before that, it had the and one, which stopped the game, so they had time to sort of collect themselves. But in those situations, you expect veteran players. You expect De'Aaron Fox. You expect DeMar DeRozan, when a run happens, to get to the free throw line, to stop something, to do anything, to stop the run. And, the Kings took, Fox took two 11-foot jumpers. DeRozan took a 17-foot jumper. Like, nobody went to the basket. And that's what you have to do in that situation, especially with AD off the court for most of that. I mean, everyone wanted to harp on Kevin Huerter and his minus 29 for the game. Anthony Davis was a negative 22 for that game. Because he wasn't on the court when all that happened.
This was a bad night for that stat.
It's the worst night for that stat, but it's a stat that people point to, especially when the coaching staff decides to not play Keon Ellis and uses Kevin Huerter. And,
do you know why he was negative 29? Did you look at that?
I went through all of the plays.
He was on the floor for the LeBron James run.
For the 21-0 run.
Got yanked. And never got back in. That's why he was negative 21 in the fourth quarter alone.
Yes.
So he was negative 8 until the start of the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Yeah, but negative 8 can happen throughout a game. I mean,
I'm saying. Yeah. Like, it was a relatively pedestrian negative 8. And then
he was on the run. He was the only guy who wasn't on the floor for any of the comeback because Malik went in. And so that's why Malik got the plus 20, because he wasn't on the floor for any of what LeBron James just did.
Well, plus he was on the floor for the entirety of the 21-0. So there's a point where Mike subs in Malik and Sabonis and Trey Lyles, right? So they got hit with a little, like the last 7-0 run was after. But Kevin was in for the entirety. So De'Aaron and DeMar, they were saved that 7-0. Mm-hmm. They had a negative 14 to open that quarter. And then they look fine because they go on the run.
They went on the run.
But Kevin.
And Malik looks like a god because the Kings lose by 5 and he's plus 20.
Yeah. So I went back and I looked at the entire three minutes and whatever second. The first play that happens in the fourth quarter, they ran Dalton Connect off a bunch of screens and into the corner. Kevin was tracking him the whole time, and Jackson Hayes stepped up and screened Kevin Huerter off right at the last second in the corner, and Alex Len didn't step up with an arm in his face. Alex Len is right there. Kevin skirts around the screen, almost gets to the shot block, but Connect hits a three. That's the only bucket that's on Kevin Huerter in that stretch. So that's why plus minus is such a bad stat. There, you know, Kevin Herter had the one play where LeBron was just running into the key and he walked over and ran into him and they stopped and it was an out of bounds call. Mm-hmm. And then the one play where De'Aaron got shoved down low and then LeBron got the ball and Kevin left connect in the corner and tried to race over at the last second for help defense. And it was too late. Fox got the and one, got the foul, and LeBron hit the bucket. Mm-hmm. Outside of that, Kevin Herter didn't turn the ball over once. He didn't take one shot. He didn't do anything wrong, but at the end of the day, everyone looks at him and goes, hey, man, what's with the negative 29 or whatever it was? Would say something to Kevin?
Well, I mean, given the fact that he came out, never went back in, he basically went with the closing lineup for a large stretch of the... Or is that just the reality of Kevin Herter now? He's not going to close games.
Well, I think it's just a reality of that game specifically where you're like, okay.
Well, he didn't close Thursday either.
Yeah. No,
I don't see the scenario where he does.
Well, right. If he's like even hotter than 4 for 7 from three, then maybe. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I mean, I think we all know what the closing lineup is. Mm-hmm. And I think it's why no one should be concerned that Malik Monk doesn't start. Like, Malik Monk is going to finish every game. He's going to finish every half. Like, he's going to get a ton of minutes. But at the same time, you know, you can't, he doesn't have to start. You know, there isn't a lot of shots for him in the starting lineup. Or there would be, but then you're taking away shots from the other guys who all need shots as well.
I was going to say this when you brought him up, and I'm going to make this proclamation right now. I'm not going to mince my words. And maybe because I was a fan of this guy for a long time, but it's clear to me, Monty whiffed on not getting Connect. He should have drafted Dalton Connect. Dalton Connect looks like the real – Dalton Connect damn near looks better than Austin Reeves today. He was sitting right there for you, and you drafted a guy that's not – might not even play for you this year. And when he does get here, who knows when and where he's going to play and if he's going to help? Because Keon Ellis can't even get in the game right now. When is Devin Carter getting in the game?
Yeah, it's tough, man. I think the interesting thing is Dalton Connect looks way taller than 6'5". That's what he's listed as. He looks way taller than that. Mm. And you needed a forward, and he sure does look like a rotational player. I mean, I don't disagree with you. I think it's a little unfair because we don't know what Devin Carter is and who he's going to be.
Fair enough.
But at the same time, at some point, you probably should have known that he was going to miss 6 months, 7 months, and that Connect was ready to step on the court. And the reason I bring that up is because if you're a team that drafts veteran college players so they can step on the court and play faster, then...
He's the most veteran college player of all time, Connect is.
Connect, yeah. I mean, Connect, yeah. Well, he's 23. But it's not like Devin Carter's young.
No, he's a vet too.
Yeah, and again, Devin.
Playing.
Yeah.
So it don't matter.
Well, that's my point though. Like if you're drafting college players who are, you know, more mature because they step on the court, Devin Carter's 22. If that's the point of the exercise, mm-hmm. then you got to draft guys who actually are going to play. And so I still want to give Devin Carter some leeway here because he could step on the court and be really, really good. The fact is he's only going to play half the season at the most and probably, I don't know if he'll play at all, but like certainly like he would only be in line for probably the last 25, 30 games of the season if healthy.
Casey mentioned it. Keon Ellis can't get on the floor. Were you surprised we saw 0 minutes for Keon Ellis last Saturday night?
Yeah, I think it was surprising. I think, you know, it'll be the first question asked of Mike Brown tonight in pregame. I talked about this a little bit on the Insiders earlier with Kyle. When Jason Anderson was the only one who traveled for the game, and so you're trying to get questions in as fast as you can, and clearly, you know, I know it's a storyline for Kings fans, but there were much bigger storylines in that game, including, you know, like an unbelievable performance by a superstar on the other side who found a way to beat you, and a game that came down to the last couple of seconds. And you got to ask the question about timeouts. You got to ask, like, there are so many questions.
Anthony Davis was big in that game, too. We keep pointing that out. Everyone talks about what LeBron did. Like, Anthony Davis was 5 of 5 in that quarter.
Oh, yeah. Like he I was, mean, his and, three and was a
shot.
Dagger.
Yeah, that's the one Casey was talking about earlier. He hit the shot that killed you.
Yeah. So I think, like, look, Mike will answer the question tonight. like for sure of why he did what he did there. But like I keep going back to this, you know, Mike is the ninth head coach I've covered here in Sacramento. You know how many head coaches have like when things are a little bit weird and odd early in a season, or you get to a rough patch in the schedule and you've lost five in a row or something, every coach tends to pare down his rotation.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you get that group back going the right way, then you start adding in more ingredients. And unfortunately, Keon is the guy who lost out in that situation. But I would be surprised if Keon doesn't play tonight. Anthony Simons is an excellent scorer. Same thing. You're going to have to face Scoot Henderson off the bench, who is going to try to run over everybody on his way to the basket. Like, the Kings are going to need a defensive-minded guard in tonight's game. But we'll have to wait and let Mike lay out what it is he thinks as to why, you know, you don't have one of your better defensive players.
So he's potentially back to being a situational player then?
Yeah, I mean, I would think so. Look at what Mike's done in Saturday's game. That wasn't even really an eight-man rotation. I mean, and Jordan McLaughlin played like 3 minutes,
right.
but Alex Lynn played 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, we're talking a 7.5-man rotation. And
well, Trey didn't play. What did Trey play?
Was he 10?
Oh, he played 18. I'm sorry. He played minutes.
Trying to get that group on the court together in basketball shape. Like, look at their schedule. They play Thursday. They play Saturday. They have Sunday off. They play Monday and Tuesday. Mm-hmm. So you got four games and six nights, whatever it is, and there's no way for them to practice in between all of these games. They're traveling. They're going straight from the game tonight to Utah tomorrow, and then straight from Utah, where they'll play in what, Atlanta? And so, like, there's very little practice time, and so you have to try to figure out how to get Kevin and how to get Trey not only on the court working with their teammates, but in game shape. And the only way to do it at this point, if they would have both been back a week before camp, we wouldn't be seeing this. I don't think we wouldn't be seeing the same like super tight rotation. But the fact that they weren't, like, I don't blame Mike. Needs to win games. He knows that, and he, you know, not just for his own job and his own sanity, but because that's the job at hand. Mm-hmm. Is to win games and to lead your team. And so, you know, they lose two games by a total of 6 points against two playoff teams. Okay. I mean, I'm not in a panic like so many other people.
The one thing that I've been trying to figure out, we've been trying to figure out, is with the Keon Ellis situation is, I guess we can go specifically to Saturday, but it's also something that we've talked about all summer. Kevin Huerter, he's your starting two guard. I wouldn't want him to be in a situation where if he starts 0-for-2, he starts looking over his shoulder thinking he's going to come out of the game. Like, I want him to play in a confident fashion. So you have that aspect. All summer, everybody's been talking about Malik Monk's got to play 30 minutes. He only got to 28 on Saturday, but we're expecting him to get 30 minutes. Then we have the thing where it's like, well, at all times, two of the three between Domas, Fox, and DeRozan need to be on the floor at all times. And I'm searching for where Keon Ellis minutes would even come from at this point. With all these parameters that we have, where would the minutes even come from? I look at that game and I say, maybe you get like some McLaughlin-type minutes where it's the end of the last 3 minutes of the third quarter or the first 3 minutes of the fourth. But that's really about it. I don't see 15 minutes. I know he played 11, I think, in the first game. But I don't – Kevin wasn't hitting in that game either. Yeah. Kevin was shooting the ball well in this game. Mm-hmm. So I don't see where the – 15 minutes that people might want for Keon.
He basically got Jordan's minutes, and then he was 7 minutes. Kevin's timeline, total minutes were seven shorter because I think he wasn't hitting shots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You mentioned all of those players, and the one player you missed is a dude who's going to be between 38 and 40 minutes every single night all season long, and that's Keegan Murray. Mm-hmm. He's not coming off the court. He's your most versatile player at this point. He's your best defensive player. He guards up. He guards down. You have to have him on the court because you don't have another guy like him at all. And so, I think you're right. I mean, if we do look at this, like DeRozan at age 35, if he's playing 33 minutes, that's probably more in line with what he should be doing. And we look at Fox at 41 minutes. If he's playing 36, so I just came up with 10 minutes right there. Mm-hmm. That, you know, there is some time, but I expect Domas to play 36, 37 minutes a night. I expect Kevin Hunter to play 26 minutes a night. So what we're talking about is that those 10 minutes that I just brought up, and then maybe McLaughlin's minutes. So 13, 14 minutes. It's tough. And it's not like Jordan McLaughlin doesn't bring something different to the table, right? Jordan McLaughlin is a point guard who shot 47% from three last year. It's not like he can't play or something. And if you're going out there and trying to run two point guards mm-hmm. with the second unit, maybe you do want somebody who can handle the ball better. Maybe you do want somebody who can initiate the offense and let Malik Monk cook a little bit. So, you know, there is an advantage to having, it's why you signed Jordan McLaughlin. So I just think, again, there wasn't so much a defensive matchup that you had to have Keon Ellis for in that game. And I know you gave up 130 points, but 65 of those, 70 of them, whatever it is, came from Anthony Davis and LeBron James, which Keon Ellis is not defending either one of those guys. So, yeah, it's tough, man. I would like to tell you that there's an easy solution here, but we'll have to wait and see how it plays out over at least, you know, give them a little bit more time to figure this all out.
And real quick, I say all that saying, I would love to see Keon Ellis play. I'm a big believer in what he can do. I'm just kind of looking at everything that we mm-hmm. just laid out, and I'm like, well, where are the minutes? Like, I don't...
Yeah, I get your point.
I don't
point.
See a lot of the minutes.
Yeah. No, it's tough. If you're not the starter, a lot of times you're going to play left out. That's tough.
Is that... How accurate is our assessment, Hammer, that Kevin Herter played 26 minutes last night, and perhaps this is at least part of the reason Keon didn't play, it's because he was, in fact, hitting shots, which he wasn't doing against Minnesota on Thursday.
Yeah, I mean, like, if the guy's hitting shots, I don't think you can take him off the court all that much. Mm-hmm. Because, again, we talk about this all the time, but when he's hitting shots, like, everyone starts moving towards him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very, very clear that he is a draw on the court. And, like, to point out the other, you know, Julius Randle busted the Kings up for 33 points in the opener. And then LeBron James hits you for 32 or 34 or whatever it was. So you're giving up like 65 points and in the first two games, and it's to like oversized, like moving target, like power forwards,
mm-hmm.
right? And both of them caught fire from the outside. The Kings don't have a secondary person to defend that guy. They just don't. Domantas Sabonis is not going to go out on the perimeter, especially when they called three ticky-tack fouls in the first half on him, but he can't go out there and defend that guy for major minutes. And until Trey Lyles is back to who Trey Lyles typically is, you know, you don't even really have him to go chase somebody like that. Mm-hmm. And you're hoping to just hold on, but like, who's the other guy on the roster that's 6'8" that is not, you know, that's over 220 pounds, maybe 230, that can handle one of those guys? Mm-hmm. And you don't got him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like Keegan Murray or bust. And against a team like Minnesota, you need a Keegan to go out there and defend Anthony Edwards, not to defend Julius Randle. Yeah. And then you had to start switching him back and forth. But it's tough. Like, you probably need to address that situation still. Mm. And I don't know what the answer is, but is it like signing a guy like Jay Crowder and buying 5 or 6 minutes? We already talked about how you don't have enough minutes for Keon Ellis. But again, you don't have enough minutes in the backcourt for Keon Ellis. You might be able to find minutes for somebody else at a different position.
Yeah. I like that train of thought with Keegan, right? Because somebody like Jay Crowder, is he better than Keegan Murray at this point in his career? Absolutely not. But he can give you a couple, 4 minutes a half, you know, where Keegan can catch his breath, you know, get a little breather, maybe not have to guard the top perimeter guy at that particular time. And you could throw a Jay Crowder on there for a couple minutes just to give Keegan at the very least a mental break real quick on both sides of the floor. And you can find minutes for him a little easier because, like you just mentioned, the position and who he'd be replacing in the starting or in the lineup. So I like the idea of somebody like that. I know, I think, I don't know, he's not a free agent, but I don't know if he's maybe looking, he got permission to seek a trade, but PJ Tucker, even though I'm not crazy about him because he can't shoot, but he got permission, right? Mm-hmm. That's what it was. Somebody like that. You could just throw PJ Tucker.
Yeah, he absolutely is not going to shoot.
No, but and he's, and LeBron's going to, you know, do what he does against him, but PJ Tucker's going to make him work a little bit, you know, and that's the type of guy we're talking about. I'm not saying necessarily him, but that's the type of guy you're looking at.
Yeah, I just don't want a 39-year-old PJ Tucker who's owed a bunch of money. I mean, that's one of those deals where, yeah, sure. And the idea of PJ Tucker 4 years ago is perfectly fine. And it's, again, why, like, during the offseason, I was more of the idea, like, look, you really need to go find a Bobby Portis type, a Jared Vanderbilt type, Brandon Clark, like these type of super athletic, strong defensive-minded guys, which they might have some limitations to their game, but we're now seeing it play out very quickly. And again, like Trey Lyles is going to be back. Trey Lyles is going to work himself into shape, but we're talking about he was down for, what, 5-6 weeks? And he's not a lockdown defender even when he is healthy. He's quality. He's a, you know, I don't know if he's a league average defender that can at least help you and, you know, he gives you a big body. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is I just point out, like, we kept hearing about the crash zone and it was like every single day at camp we heard about the crash zone and, you know, Isaac Jones get on the court because he had 11 opportunities to hit the crash zone. He hit all 11. The Kings have 9 offensive rebounds between the first two games, and they're going up against a Portland team tonight that had 22 offensive rebounds yesterday, and the team they faced had 15 offensive rebounds, and I believe the Kings are last in the league in offensive rebounds per game, and it was like a huge point of emphasis, and then when you have Keegan Murray having to defend these big guys, he's not able to go hit the crash zone like that. You know, when he's being defended by LeBron James, there is no way you don't leave LeBron to go try to get a rebound. You get back. And so it's a little strange how that's working out right now and how the point of emphasis, like usually with the NBA, the point of emphasis lasts like 3 or 4 weeks. And in this situation with the Kings, like I haven't seen it in the first two games of the season at all.
Yeah. So who's that fall on? Or is it just not realistic?
I think they're just trying to figure everything else out, and then they'll get back to it. But they've got a lot to figure out. And I think, like, they've played very competitively. It's not like they've looked horrible.
Yeah, but they still have lost 7 games in a row.
Yeah, but, I mean,
and as Morgan pointed out, they haven't won since April.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about preseason games where they led at halftime. You know, they led at halftime the first two games with their starters on the court, and then their starters don't play. So, like, I don't take any stock, and I don't look at this as a 7-game losing. It's an 8-game losing streak if you want to count the loss to New Orleans in the play-in game. But that's, to me, that's not a true 8-game losing streak.
I disagree.
That's fine. You can disagree with me. I don't care.
About that game on Saturday as well.
Oh, that means tonight's a 9-game losing streak. Oh,
son of a...
For the love of Luke Walton.
We just can't get away from him.
Man. thought we were past it.
Well, it's only one. It's only
one. Well, it's one. It is a good point.
It's only one 9-game losing streak.
Good point.
The game on Saturday, there was a lot of things that took place in between that game or during that game, and it was some good and some bad, but there was a lot that took place to get us to the point where with about a minute and a half left, it was a 4-point game, right? Mm-hmm. And you even take it down even further with about 35 seconds to go or something like that. Kings were down 2. You needed a stop. You're looking around that court and you can't let LeBron beat you. You got to leave somebody open. Oh, we'll leave Anthony Davis open at the top of the key for 3. I'll take that. He just made a shot. He's a top 75 player of all time. He made a shot. I tip my hat to him for that. And I think there's a lot of things that took place up until that point. But you were there. You had an opportunity. And one of the great players of all time hit a shot to kind of put you away. Because I think if he would have missed that shot, the way the Kings were playing, I thought they were going to score and it tied or at least take the lead late in that game. Anthony Davis hit a shot, man. You tip your hat. That's kind of what the game came down to for me on Saturday. I know it doesn't mean everything's great or bad, one or the other, but.
Well, you're right about the shot for sure, but the rest is your imagination.
What's that?
We don't know what they would have done.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not disagreeing with you.
Yeah.
But yeah, that ended the game.
Yeah,
like you saw it on Domas' face. Yeah. Like Domas was like, "You've got to be kidding me!"
Mm-hmm.
Like he contested that shot. Mm-hmm. Like Domas was right there, and it's just a hell of a shot by Anthony Davis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Anthony Davis is a 29.7% career 3-point shooter. Last year he shot 27%. The year before that he shot 25%. The year before that 18.6%. Like, if you're gonna lose on that shot. Okay.
You did.
Like, you did, but, you know, like, when we watched the LeBron, like, just, he was just so incredible.
LeBron was 4 of 9 from 3 on the game.
Yeah.
He was 3 of 3 in the fourth.
Yeah.
And I think they were all in a row. They felt like they happened one after the other. That's probably not true, but that's what it felt like.
Yeah, he had 2 28-footers and a 27-footer. They were, man. Like, he was walking
into
one was
a logo. Him. One was a, you know, like, I don't know what it is. I think it's crypto. But, like, where the Golden One Center is on the King's Court. He hit one from, like, around that area.
Well, that, and you have to go back to the third quarter. You remember that silly three-pointer he took in the third quarter? Where he went off one leg over on the...
Mm-hmm.
So, my point is, like, if you're the Kings, you're looking at him like, all right, like... He's not going to bust us from 28 feet twice and 27 feet once. He just threw up some crazy stuff with, like, off one with his knee raised, like, woo! Like, what are we doing here? And then he comes out and goes, like, again, for me, it was Damian Lillard. The second he got across half court, you had to blitz him.
Yeah.
But then you forget.
There wasn't 3 seconds left. There were 10 minutes.
No, that's true. But the other problem is, he's got 14 rebounds and 10 assists. So if you go double team him, they had enough shooters on the court that they would have got you a different way, most likely. So I don't know. I mean, it's one game. And we can say it's 2 games. What you can't do is you can't have it be 3, and especially with the team that's coming in tonight. This is where the run has to end. And you have to, if you're going to play, I'll say this, if the Kings play the way they did last night, I mean, on Saturday night, if they play the way they did against Minnesota on Thursday. Look at the next 6 games. Mm-hmm. You got a really good shot to win a bunch of games.
James Caraway over here.
Me and Jay on the same page. Me and Jay, we see the same thing.
Let's talk about it. Let's talk about what this schedule looks like ahead. We'll talk about the game tonight. It's the Sacramento Kings back at the Golden One Center, which sure has been repaired after the weekend. And we will talk about the Kings getting back on track here. Dealing with Casey. James Hamm, brought to you by Sky River Casino on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320.
Gotcha.
We're back. Who's no? Randy Chastain has a statue. This plaque is terrible, though.
Man, I wish I could remember the actor's name. They said she looked like.
Oh, that is terrible. It looks like John Elway.
What in the world?
No, Gary Busey. Is that what's the actor's name?
Oh, yeah. Gary Busey. Yeah. No, that absolutely looks like Gary Busey. That is hilarious.
Oh, my gosh.
That is awful. Oh, Randy.
It wasn't Bum Phillips. Who's Bum Phillips' son?
The statue is
Wade Phillips. Wade Phillips. Wade Phillips.
The statue is dope.
The statue's cool. Fantastic.
I don't know if I've seen the statue.
No, the statue's fantastic. The plaque, whatever Hall of Fame. I would demand. Do not take me out of the Hall of Fame.
Yeah,
do not put this up for people to see.
Oh, no, yeah, statue fire. The statue's fire. I've never seen the statue before. That's fire.
That plaque is awful. My goodness.
Here's a line from this piece.
The plaque is disrespectful.
Here's a line from SI. The disastrous artwork drew comparisons to a variety of middle-aged men to elderly men, from Rex Ryan to Brian Dennehy.
That's terrible.
What is
going into the Hall of Fame, and they show you, ta-da! I don't think so, dude.
Like, oh, no.
I don't think so, dude.
That was, yeah, no, oh. I'm with you, Dave. Take me out. Take me out.
Yeah.
The Ronaldo one is awful as well.
He looks like Sloth from Goonies.
Bryce hit us with the hard times. Does kind of look like Dusty Rhodes. It does look a little like Dusty Rhodes. Oh, man.
Oh, and wow.
As Russ says, Sacramento Kings, please win tonight's game.
Please win
so,
tonight.
Let's – Kings lose to the Blazers tonight. It is panic time, no?
I mean, they're going to be shaken for sure. I think what we'll hear a lot from the teams, 2 years ago we started 0-4, so let's calm down. But as far as like what it means, sure, there should be some sort of panic. I don't know what that like. What's the effect of the cause and the like? What are they going to do about it? Like, you got to come out and be better the next game for sure. But at the same, like, they don't have a lot of other answers here.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like they can go dig deep in the bag and, you know, we're going to come out tomorrow tomorrow against Utah and Isaac Jones is going to be in the starting lineup or something. And I'm not trying to disrespect Isaac Jones.
Like, yeah, I got you.
What are you doing? They're,
yep.
You know what? Doug McDermott's going to play more than 5 minutes that he played in the first game? Like, I don't know what the answer would be.
And I fully expect like a level of panic to happen if they were to lose tonight. I wouldn't panic, but I'd be really upset with a loss tonight. I mean, Portland is coming off of a back-to-back. That didn't matter on Saturday because the Lakers were too. But at least the Lakers didn't travel anywhere. They got to go home. But Portland is coming off a back-to-back. Regardless, I know it's the NBA. I know the bad teams don't know that they're bad yet. But, nah, man. Like, you can't – we go roster for roster. And like I was telling Damian and everybody before – if the Kings are who we think they are, who we think they can be, I'm not afraid to say you should not be losing to the Portland Trailblazers.
No,
especially when you need a win. Like, it's not like you're 2-0 and you come in kind of fat and like feeling good about yourself and get shocked. Like, no, you need to get a W. So you should have laser focus and you should be ready to go. No doubt in my mind, I should be saying, we all should be saying, win this damn game tonight. You should win this game.
No, I'm with you. Like, I mean, if you want to be a playoff team, you can't keep doing this. You can't put yourself on a dark path early in the season. You need positive momentum. And, you know, but they lose tonight and win tomorrow, or they win tonight and lose tomorrow.
Well, and that's what you both were talking about. You've got to win these two games.
Oh, no. You certainly put yourself in a situation where, like, realistically, you look at the first 10 games of the season, and there's a lot of winnable games in the first 10 games of the season. But I was warned, like, from someone inside, like, hey, if we start 5-5, don't be super surprised. Like, don't look at the schedule as much as, you know, like, you always hear this from the team. Don't look at us. I mean, don't look at the other team. Look at us.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we need to worry about us and go out there and play. And I would say the same thing. Don't look at the other team right now. Mm-hmm. Look at the Kings and how they're playing, because they're trying to figure out how to not be disjointed. Mm-hmm. They are, like, on the defensive side of the ball. Offensively, we can go back and look at that, you know, the 21-0 run, and they didn't turn the ball over a ton in that run. They missed a bunch of shots. So offensively, they weren't good in that run. Mm-hmm. Defensively, though, it's been all season long. Like, well, it's been all preseason and the first two games. They're not super on the same page. We're seeing, was it the late dunk by Rui Hachimura that was like, they just forgot about a guy under the basket? The same exact thing happened in the Minnesota game. Late in the game, they had a wide open dunk by someone who's just standing underneath the basket. And like, the Kings have to be better and figure things out. But like, you're playing 7-8 guys, and of the 7 or 8, two of those guys just weren't there, and one of the other guys is brand new to the squad. And so there's going to be growing pains here. I just don't know how long those growing pains can last. Mm-hmm. And when do we go from, hey, this is a growing pain issue, to, hey, you might not be very good. And you can't make that decision at 3 games. You can't make it at 10 games. Mm-hmm. This is the NBA. We need to let this thing play out a little bit.
You mentioned it before we went to break, and I saw the same thing we all did, looking at the schedule. The next six games, this is what's going to tell me more than these first two games, because your problem last year was not being able to compete with the good teams, not even being able to beat the good teams. Like, you were able to do that. One of your big issues was being able to handle those moments when you had teams in front of you that you should take care of, that you didn't get up for, or you didn't take – whatever they were saying was the issue. Next six games, you've got Portland tonight, Utah tomorrow, Atlanta, Toronto, Miami, Toronto. I never say undefeated. I always leave, I guess, a buffer or room for error or something like that. I'm looking at that. Come on, man. That's got to be 4-2 in the next six games. That's got to be 4-2 in the next six games.
Yeah, you would hope that they can get to 500 really quickly here. Mm. Like, and I don't know if it's six games in, eight games in, you get to 500, but like, that's what the goal is. And again, the first 10 games of the season for me, you know, Portland, like you said, Utah, the Hawks, the Raptors, the Heat, who are not very good at all right now either. But then you have the Raptors again, and even the Clippers. There's a bunch of games in there that you should be able to get. Mm-hmm. And we'll have to see. I mean, it doesn't matter what we think. It realistically, they have to come out and play better. And I think tonight will be, actually probably the next two nights will be a really good judge for this team, because while Portland is a mess, you know, they're coming off a big win, but overall, they're a collection of talent. They're not a team. But the problem is that they play hard, and they've punched this team in the face a couple of times, the Kings. And if the Kings don't come out and play with the level of intensity required to win an NBA game against a bad team, then that's a much bigger problem.
So let me make sure I got this. You're talking about the Blazers are a collection of talent.
Yeah.
Not a team. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the Blazers won, what, 22 games last year? 21 games?
Yeah, they weren't good.
No, they weren't good at all. So, you know, they didn't go out and magically change their roster 100% and you're going to face a totally... They were 21-61 last year. Mm. And you lost to them. One of those 21 wins is against you. Mm. And so for me, if I'm looking at this game... I don't care if it's a 6-point game or a 3-point game or a 12-point game. At the end of the day, the Kings need to come out and be the aggressive team and the more physical team and put their stamp on a game. Mm-hmm. They need to be playing faster than their opponent. And I think that we'll know a lot about this team if they come out and they just aren't, they're flat or they don't seem to take it serious. Mm-hmm. You know, if they go down by 18 but rally to lose by 3, man, that's not a moral victory, because this isn't a great team. And you're going to face the same thing tomorrow. Like, that Utah Jazz team, they are physical. They have big players. They play hard. And if you don't go in there and match that physicality and just get pushed around, then we're going to start having, like, some pretty difficult discussions about, like, the mental makeup of the team, because that's a big deal.
Mm. Also, according to James Hamm, Shaedon Sharpe out. Robert Williams out, Matisse Thybulle out, and according to Sean Cunningham, all three two-way players are out as well for the Blazers. Got the Kings
beat
right where they want.
Working together.
Yeah, there we go.
Oh, yes, they do. Yes, they do.
And like, look, I want to pull something up, Scooter, in the chat. No, man, Mike Brown is not in danger of losing these guys. That's not where we're at. I mean, like, we're two games into a season, and everyone on that team knows that they didn't have two of their guys, and when their guys came back, they're not, like, they're in shape, they're not in basketball shape, and they haven't been on the court. Like, everyone understands, but there will be a certain level of frustration with this group.
One of the, obviously, the biggest frustration of the last two games is being 0-2. Outside of that, man, Domas has had a really good start to the season that's just kind of... It's not going to get love because the Sacramento Kings are 0-2, but he is, you know, I talked about him in the preseason, Hammer, that I did kind of feel like the team was coasting. I felt like the team was trying to get through the preseason, and I don't fault them for that. I don't think that's exclusive to Sacramento. I don't think that's exclusive to this Sacramento team. But Domas wasn't. I didn't feel like there was a single moment during those preseason games that Domantas Sabonis played that he was coasting. And, man, that has carried over here into the regular season. He has been incredible to start this year.
Yeah, he's averaging 26.5 points, 10 rebounds, 5.5 assists. Mm. Also, 1.5 steals and one block per game. 66.7% from the field, 57.1% from three. He's averaging 10 two-point attempts per game. He's shooting 70%. But he's also averaging 8.5 free throw attempts per game and shooting 76.5% from the free throw line. Mm. The Kings right now, they lead the NBA in free throw percentage at 83.3%. They are also fifth in the league in free throw attempts at 5 per game. And again, like I think the physicality is there. I think on the offensive end, they are attacking. In all honesty, like Domas has been just absolutely incredible. I mean, to have a triple-double in your first two games, I'm a little surprised he didn't have a double-double in the first one. The rebounding numbers were low, but I think we're going to see him start to build and on what we saw in the preseason from him.
Yeah, he's been fantastic. And now they even got the little, I told him a little bit, settle down just a little bit now. But now the built-in play, attack the basket, center in the corner. I was like, all right, wait a minute. This is about the fifth time I've seen this in two games. Settle down. They went 1-for-2. Alex Lynn just missed his, and then Sabonis made it. That was a big time three late in that game when he hit that shot. Mm-hmm. So what are the odds we see that again tonight? It looks like a play
based
they
on
go
what
to.
You just said a couple of times.
It looks like a play they go to nowadays.
Well, that and they're running a high pick and roll at the top in that situation with Herter, which is interesting because Herter can shoot from anywhere. So you can't leave the screener. And I'm intrigued to see. Like, they've got to build new layers to this offense. And I think that those are some of the subtle things we're seeing. But the second, I mean, I don't know if you guys have seen the splits for when Jokic is on the court versus when he's off the court. But it goes from, like, their offense is, like, a 113. And when he steps off the court, it drops to, like, a 54. Like, the Kings have the same problem. Like, part of the issue that they had...
With Domas?
Well, no, that was Jokic. One of the problems with when Domas stepped off the floor and to begin the fourth quarter, that's when the 14-0 run happened, like, that quick. And by the time he came back out on the court, it's like, hey, everything's already rolling. Like, and he turned the ball over as soon as he came on the court. He was in for, like, 8-9 seconds, and he threw the ball out of bounds. Yeah. So, like, those are the little things, but...
So, what is that? I mean, obviously, it's a credit to how good Domas is, but is that a knock on Alex?
No, because the team has to play different when Alex is on the court. We've talked about this forever. Like, if you're going to run this specific style of offense, then you almost have to have two guys that do similar things, you know? And I don't think Alex is a bad passer. And he's fine in the DHO game, but I also don't see a lot of dribble handoffs and like going on right now. I mean, that's why I you know, again, game one, Sabonis has one assist. Game two, he has, 10 or 11. But, yeah, Sabonis is one of those players that, I mean, you got to figure out when he's on and off the court, how do you survive without him? And that's, again, part of the reason why you go out and get a guy like DeMar DeRozan. But you also need a Malik Monk to step up. You need a De'Aaron Fox to step up in those situations and really shoulder the weight of the offense and try to carry it on when he's off the court. Because, I mean, it's a bit of a struggle.
You know, one of the things I have enjoyed so far about having DeMar DeRozan here is it doesn't feel like he's gone off. He had some really big shots in the fourth quarter on Saturday, a couple threes, I think, even. But it doesn't feel like he's, oh, my gosh, DeRozan's just unguardable. And then got 23 points. Like, this is just kind of what he does, something that you could rely on. Now, the thing that frustrated us on Saturday that we talked about earlier was no rebounds from DeMar DeRozan. The Kings gave up 13 offensive rebounds in that game. Is that something that we may have to look forward to all season, and it's going to be an all-season problem in your eyes?
Probably. I don't know. I mean, you have the best rebounder in the NBA on your team. And you should be perfectly fine rebounding. Like DeMar DeRozan, I think game one he had 8 rebounds. Mm. So he needs to figure out how to be more consistent and not do sort of the Harrison Barnes thing with the rebounds. Either you get one or you get a bunch, and that's not going to cut it. But I also think that part of the issue the Kings had was that Keegan Murray was out trying to defend LeBron James the whole time, who A, wasn't missing shots, but B, like, Keegan has to spend all of his energy chasing LeBron and trying to be there, and so he's not rebounding. So when Keegan's not able to rebound at a high clip, other people need to step up and do it. And, you know, again, against a team like Portland tonight, Keegan should be just fine rebounding. And even, you know, maybe you could say he's going to spend a lot of his time defending Lauri Markkanen tomorrow. So maybe his rebounding numbers won't be great because he's going to be on the perimeter chasing Lauri quite a bit. But overall, I think Keegan should be able to be a guy who's, you know, 6 to 8 rebounds per game every single night. Mm-hmm.
That's one of the tough parts. Again, you talk about the different, you know, really particularly Friday's, Saturday night's game. As Casey and I were talking about earlier, they hit, like, we have markers for them. Like, oh, they do this, they do this, they do this. They probably won. They hit all of those markers Saturday night. Mm-hmm. Like, every single one of them. Offensively, you know, the questions of how DeMar fits. I don't feel like there's questions about that anymore. Like, DeMar has been a 20-point-per-game scorer his entire life. It doesn't appear that that is any danger of going anywhere. Like, that's what he's doing. Keegan's being more aggressive with the basketball. Domas is getting his shots. Domas is scoring more than he has before. He's actually getting to the foul line. The team as a whole is getting to a foul line more. De'Aaron Fox is still De'Aaron Fox with 28-10 Saturday night. The offense is still working. Those barometers are still there, but there's just other things that are keeping those dubs from coming in.
No, and I totally
a
agree.
A long run, a big-time run, has happened in each of those games. Obviously, the one that happened on Saturday night was massive, but that's really what switched the complexion of the game on Thursday night, too, was a run that the Timberwolves had.
Yeah, and it's the second you start pulling the guys off the floor. I mean, if you look at the...
Well, 48 minutes for Domas, then.
Yeah, I mean, but if you look at the splits, their opening lineup has been phenomenal. Like, they've been really good. Offensive rating, defensive rating. Their closing lineup has been really good. It's all the lineups in between. And again, it's not fair to put it all. It's a lot of it to me is about just not being comfortable with each other and not having enough time during the training camp and preseason schedule to be on the same page. You know, it's one thing that, yeah, Trey Lyles has played with these guys forever. Well, okay, but he's never played with DeMar DeRozan. And the offense is different because DeMar's on there. The defense is different because DeMar's there. The defense is different because you have a new defensive coordinator. Jordy Fernandez is gone. Luke Laux is doing the defensive like game planning. So there are things that you can point to that are different. And I think a lot of this is just you need 2 weeks. You need 10 days for this team to like bond. And you know, I think one of the good things is they're about to go on the road. And we all know that that's where teams really get close is on the road. They spend way more time together. So this road trip is probably coming at the perfect time for this team where they're going to spend a lot of time together over the next, you know, like 8 days or whatever. And they're going to figure some of this stuff out. They'll have some extra practices, but they'll also have a lot more conversations and just kind of like going over film together as opposed to just looking at film with a coach. You know, having conversations with each other about like, hey, you know, where do you like me to hit you with a 3-point pass? You know, if you're outside the arc, where do you want it? Do you want a bounce pass? You want a pass, fire to chest pass? You know, what is it that you prefer? And so you can kind of build a lot of like chemistry and all those things like on the road and also like build your culture. And so I think that we'll learn a lot about this team in the next 2 days, but I also think over the next like 10 days, we're probably going to see them like sort of get closer to who we think that they should be.
Yeah. Well, let's start with a win tonight.
It feels like so much of that's on the defensive end though. Cause again, offensively they're doing, I think what everybody hoped, they just haven't been able to get the key stops on the defensive end, even if it is literally just the one. Get the one stop on Anthony Davis, and I don't know what Domantas Sabonis could have done differently. I don't think he could have done anything differently. Anthony Davis just hit a hell of a shot. Obviously, they had an opportunity late against Minnesota. I guess those are things that just come in time, man. Maybe that's the last maybe that's the last thing to hit is those winning moments. Those moments where you win games on single stops, single offensive possession. Maybe that's the last thing to come to a team that's still piecing everything together, you know, with a major, major new piece. And then, you know, a couple of important guys who are big parts of the rotation who have really been with you now for 4 days.
Yeah. I mean, I totally agree. This is it's a work in progress. It was always going to be a work in progress. We all knew that coming out of training camp. They did not look good in preseason, but they're mixing and matching pieces. It's not a big surprise that they've come out and looked a little shaky, but they've lost by a total of 6 points in two games. Mm. Like, it's not like they've got clubbed. They've been in every game. They've had a shot. They had a shot to win one of them, and they, again, I think it's 57.1 seconds, they were down two. Mm. Like, you gave yourself a shot in both of these games, and, like, did they look great? No. But you can see the outlines of something that's pretty interesting. And I just want to give it more time to kind of grow into what it's going to be.
I'm with that.
All right. Well, if they lose, we're panicking.
I'm okay with that. I understand.
As the Lakers fans would say, if there is no damn purple light in the sky tonight, it's going to be tough. Mm. It's going to be tough. Lakers fans had a field day with the beam.
Oh,
over there.
Man. The whole damn country had a field day.
Well, brought it on ourselves.
Yeah.
And I don't mean we, but it's fine. Oh, it's fine. Man. That's why that man was booed at the Chatty House meetup. Come on, Drapes. Got us some slack here. Drapes and Katie, y'all got to do better. All right. It is the Kings and the Blazers tonight at the Golden One Center. Sacramento Kings looking for their first victory. Win or lose, we will be here tomorrow to recap it all, beginning at 10 a.m. With the insiders, also with us. We got Trista Crip coming up at the 2 o'clock hour. And Jason Jones will be with us tomorrow to close things out. Lots to discuss. Week 7 overreactions. Plenty ahead. I don't know the game tonight.
Giants and Steelers. They talk about a sports equinox.
You guys can tell me about it.
Not for me.
You guys can tell me about it. Let me know how it goes. Purple and Black pregame show coming up next, and then we'll head off to the World Series here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320.
Vamos Kings, light the beam.